I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE after US elections that we suggested in recent episodes might be, as it turned out to be, a landslide for Trump. The lying genocide Joe Holocaust Harris elite control of US hegemonic power, along with their lackeys in propaganda media, lost for now. In the 4 years since Trump was in power, the USA has lost its global dominance with the rise of BRICS, has picked fights with much of the global South, sacrificed hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian lives on the altar of Nazism, isolated itself at the UN with its UK-US-EU armed Middle East genocide, all while domestically 40 million Americans could not eat without federal aid. One of the greatest US presidents that has never been is veteran Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich, who also ran in this 2024 election. The former mayor of Cleveland and lifelong fighter for global justice and peace joins me again from Cleveland in Ohio. Dennis, thanks so much for coming back on. I suppose I've got to start before we get to the wider country and the global implications. Commiserations for your loss in Ohio in the House. They gerrymandered you. You talk in your book, Division of Light and Power, how corporate conspiracies tried to destroy you. Why did you not win the seat in Ohio?
Well, you know, I ran as an independent, and I ran into tremendous political headwinds in terms of the polarization at gone on in American politics. And I challenged both parties, but in particular, the Democratic Party that I came from. I challenged them on the endless wars and on the border and on the rising deficit and the government spying on American people. And while I didn't win, what is notable is that I received more votes, more than 50,000 votes, which is more than any other independent candidate in a three-way race for Congress in America. So, you know, there is a little bit of glimmer of light there. I'm fine about the outcome for me. I had a still point whether I won or lost. But I do believe that the shift that's happened in American politics towards Donald Trump represents not only his resilience, but it also represents the failure of the Democratic National Committee to be able to come up with a sane and coherent plan to rally people to the side of the Democratic Party.
Now, you know what's coming next in terms of questions, Dennis. I mean, you were chief of staff to Trump's reported health secretary in the cabinet, RFK Jr. So has your phone been ringing? Are you in the cabinet of the new Trump administration when it takes office in January?
I don't think so. But I remain available to help advise people on an informal basis. I don't know that it would become formal. I'm certainly very interested in seeing our next president be successful, and all Americans should be. We've come through a very dark period where we put this country, our government put this country to the edge of World War III, and people don't want that. People want to be able to feed their families. They want to be able to have a roof over their head, pay their medical bills, and educate their children. And I'll tell you, those are very practical aspirations, which I think people have in common, Americans have in common with people around the world. And Americans are not interested in killing other people globally. They want to start taking care of things here at home.
And of course, that's the kind of thing that we heard from, except on Gaza, from RFK Jr., from Tulsi Gabbard, from Tucker Carlson, from Elon Musk, all these Trump characters. And then suddenly, late into the campaign, the Trump campaign, we heard about Mike Pompeo being talked about at the Pentagon. I know last time round, Trump said drain the swamp and then just made the swamp bigger and bigger and bigger. What's your hunch? What's your feeling about what you just said there and whether it's really taken on board by Trump himself?
Well, Donald Trump's presidency is going to depend on not getting further involved in foreign entanglements. He really needs to focus on the domestic economy and on helping business move forward. This economy is shaky. The dollar is not in the same position it was 4 years ago. The meeting at Kazan of BRICS showed the potential for an infrastructure to clear transactions. The fintech is already in place to do it. There's a lot of work that President Trump's going to need to do, and he needs to do it without the United States being involved in these wars in the Middle East and in Europe. Doesn't mean it's going to happen overnight, though.
Yeah, I'll get to the Middle East in a second, but when you speak about Kazan and BRICS, I mean, was it a negotiating position he was trying to develop in the campaign to say 100% tariffs on countries that de-dollarize and so on, or is he, does he understand that there's a new world out there and the option for the United States is to join BRICS?
Well, there's a new world. And it was taking place in response to sanctions that were disastrous. It's taking place in response to wars that never had to be fought, going back to 9/11. And that new world is taking shape away from the United States and in response to the unipolarity impulse, which comes out of the U.S. State Department. So I think Donald Trump is going to be faced with some serious decisions about scaling back the U.S. Position in Europe and in the Middle East, and to try to find a way that we can move past the the events that the Biden administration embroiled America in.
I mean, you were chief of staff to RFK Jr., who appeared to support the genocide, and we don't really understand the comments coming from Trump as to whether what he meant when he said, finish the job, Netanyahu, Biden's holding you back, and so forth. What does the money from Miriam Adelson for the Trump campaign, what is the significance of that money? Because he won the House, he's won the Senate, he can't run again. Does Donald Trump owe Miriam Adelson?
You have to, I've never met Trump. I met just about everybody else in the American political scene in the last 50 years, but I haven't met Trump. So, but what I do know in studying him is that he's a deal maker. He is in a position where, as president, he has a mandate. And even though he was very close to the Adelsons, and certainly Mrs. Adelson has been very generous to him, and he is close to Netanyahu, President Trump, his presidency is going to depend on having some room to maneuver and ending this conflict in the Middle East. If there's no question that Netanyahu would like to drag the U.S. into a war with Iran. We're in the foothills of that kind of activity already. But Trump's smart enough that he knows that there's limits to how far the Likudniks, who are part of the right wing with Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, can be permitted to push a plan for greater Israel without dragging the U.S. in. You know, the one thing, there's an image that I want to share with the viewers. When you looked at election night, I think it was about 2 a.m. Eastern when Donald Trump claimed victory, and you saw dozens of people from his family take the stage. I mean, he's a family man. He's got, he's concerned about children, grandchildren. I don't think he's personally interested in seeing the U.S. expand into war. He's not a globalist in that way. And so I'm hopeful that impulse will cause him to, again, dial back the U.S. involvement and counsel Netanyahu that you can't push any further. There has to be accountability here. I doubt that it will occur at an international judiciary level, but the essential accountability is to counsel to make a deal that counsels Netanyahu to stop it, because the further he goes on, he risks the destruction of Israel.
It's the family man. It's the family man bit that's a bit worrying. I know his daughter Tiffany may be married to an Arab American, but it's of course Jared Kushner, and the fact that Netanyahu used to sleep in his bed that's worrying. And it's the idea that's put around that real estate deals in southern Gaza.
Those things are worth noting. Absolutely. But again, you know, well, you can't project exactly what's going to happen because there's so many moving pieces that have resulted in genocide. It's any person with a heart has to be horrified at what's taking place in Gaza and in the West Bank and in Lebanon. But I will say it again, Trump's presidency will rest on his deal-making finesse to find a clever way to get out of this and to help his friend Netanyahu get out of it. And the same thing is true with Trump as a deal-maker with respect to Russia, although I think that the Biden administration has so bungled matters, sacrificing the lives of the flower of Ukraine. All these young people were killed. The Biden administration's approach is just not going to be effective in trying to bring about a cessation of that war. And I think, you know, Russia is going to have to settle that with Ukraine in a way that will be in both parties' best interest. And, you know, Russia has to deal with the a certain faction of the Ukraine government that really doesn't want to see that war end.
Yeah, I'll return back to Ukraine in a second, but then there were reports that Iran was going to attack on US Election Day. It didn't retaliate for the previous UK-US EU armed Israeli attack on Iran. I don't know whether the Iranian government is thinking of attacking in this intervening period, the interregnum period, so that then Trump can say he's the peacemaker afterwards and now would be a better time.
Let's look at that, the interregnum period. That is a period that I'd pay careful attention to, because if you look at what happened in 2008, when Barack Obama was elected and the Bush administration was outgoing, it was over the holiday period, over Christmas, in the run-up to Christmas and New Year's, that Israel launched a fierce attack on Gaza. And I would expect, I think you could almost predict that there'll be an acceleration. Again, the Israeli ability to be able to control the narrative has been extraordinary, so that people really don't understand the vulnerability that Israel does have. And Israel doesn't want to admit it because it then would be seen as a security problem. So I think by the time President Trump takes office, there will already be in place the unfolding of a plan to try to extricate the U.S. from the potential of going into a third world war with Iran over the Middle East.
Dennis Kucinich, I'll stop you there. More from the twice U.S. Democrat presidential contender and former mayor of Cleveland, Ohio, after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the twice U.S. Democrat presidential contender and former mayor of Cleveland, Ohio, Dennis Kucinich. Dennis, in part one, you were talking about the complexities of what will be happening amidst the genocide in Gaza, the invasion of Lebanon, of course, the almost daily UK-US EU armed bombing of Iran, Syria and Yemen. But given that you mentioned that the important thing is to concentrate on domestic infrastructure and just rebuilding the basic of some kind of society after decades of Clinton, Bush, Obama, Biden neoliberalism, will the military-industrial complex just go, okay, you're going to turn swords into plowshares, we don't have a problem with this plan, because your manufacturing base right now is all to Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, and General Dynamics and the rest of them. We're not advertising people to sell their shares or buy their shares.
Well, military and industrial intelligence community nexus that you speak of is capital intensive. It's not labor intensive. It's all about the bells and whistles of a national defense infrastructure But you know, you have to look at what's happening domestically. About the U.S. right now spends about $1 trillion a year on so-called defense. It's so much of it is wasted. So much of it involves the taxpayers being absolutely ripped off, paying multiple times for goods that would cost a fraction of what is paid for on the market. So we have a moment here, a confluence of events, where the American economy is struggling, where the American people are having trouble, by and large, making ends meet, where the economic policies of the past administration have not been successful in reviving the economy, where there's always money for Wall Street, but not money for Main Street, and where the United States, precisely because of the money that we put into wars that were not necessary since 9/11, $8 trillion of the $36 trillion deficit the U.S. has is due to wars that we didn't need to fight. So you look at all that, and the last thing we need to do is to be able to continue servicing a war in Europe with Ukraine and Russia, to furthering a war in the Middle East, encouraging Israel to move towards and take on Iran, and let us not forget the down payment on war that was given to Taiwan to challenge China, which is, you know, one of the more ambitious undertakings of the hawks and the Pentagon. So you look at all of those things, and it's about a globalist approach. Populism won in the United States, not globalism. Populism is now moving the Republican Party. Make note of that. That's a historic shift. And so the globalists who might be trying to retrench inside the State Department apparatus are going to find themselves at a disadvantage when they propose policies that are going to come clashing with the necessity of a domestic agenda, which the American people not just expect, they demand. And so President Trump has a mandate for sure, but that mandate contains the demands of the American people for taking care of things here at home, for dealing with high prices that come from monopolies, and dealing with the high cost of housing, which, by the way, is linked directly to Wall Street hedge funds taking large shares of the American housing market and in their control and driving up the prices. I mean, Trump has to focus on things here. And while presidents always have this idea of looking abroad for dragons to slay, Trump cannot do that. He can't afford it. He has to find a way to make a deal, and he's smart enough to do it, to make the deal to avoid war and to find a way to focus on things here at home. And if he does that, he'll be a successful president, and he will find himself among the great presidents. If he doesn't do it, we're in for another 4 years of chaos.
Yeah, I detect a certain optimism here, Dennis. I've got to say, more optimism than usual from you. I mean, would you also say that given the amount of money Holocaust Harris had, it also shows that money doesn't buy you elections in the United States? And with all of the hegemonic propaganda media in your country, Latinos, women, African Americans, Arab Americans, of course. So you can't say anymore about American politics that money buys it, because she had way more money than Trump.
Money may not buy it, but it makes a pretty good down payment. And, you know, Trump, I think when all is said and done, they'll probably be combined about $3 to $4 billion spent in this election just for president. And make no mistake about it, when the United States Supreme Court gave a couple rulings over the last two decades of Buckley versus Valeo and Citizens United that essentially said money's free speech, all the corporate interests came in, they formed these PACs, all kinds of opaque and sophisticated ways of lacking transparency and being able to influence elections. They did it at every level, and they're still doing it at every level. However, you point out correctly that there was something else afoot in America, and that is that the desire of people for an end to a globalist position which spent the resources of our country all over the world, forgot about things here at home, which opened up our borders to people from all over the world, didn't take care of our own people at home. Let me tell you, the American debt registered with the American people, and this vote, earlier this week, was something that people looked at, an opportunity for real change. And I would anticipate they will get it, but I'd also say not without a struggle with inside those forces in the State Department, in the Pentagon, and in the intelligence agency, who are going to be squealing as they're pulled away from the trough.
Yeah. Well, what is the nature of that struggle when the populism you speak of fights with that deep state? Will they kill Donald Trump in the 2 months ahead of January the 20th?
Listen, his personal security is a matter of national concern. One of the things that I found shocking in this election is that an assassination attempt could be made on a former president and presidential candidate, Donald Trump, and within a matter of days, it just went into a memory hole. It's like, what? Just tried to kill a president and a former president. What are we talking about here? And the media, even when the news first broke, tried to act like it was fireworks or something. I mean, there is this entrenched oppositional force that even now is on the attack against Donald Trump. And it breeds violence, no question about it. Now, America really must move away from that kind of a position. We have to, in an election which was a result of acute polarization, we now have to move to depolarize, to take a note from Lincoln's second inaugural when he said, with malice towards none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right, let us bind up the nation's wounds. And we have to bind up our wounds, which are partisan, and the hyper-partisanship must recede. And if it doesn't, Trump still has a mandate. If it doesn't, I think the American people are weary of the partisan brickbats. They want to see something done here at home, and they certainly do not want to see more of their resources squandered globally. They're not going to stand for it. And again, I will say that the big shift that occurred in this election is that the Republican Party claimed the populist mantle, and they basically ejected the globalist sentiment from which has had a hold of on the Republican Party for generations.
Well, if Trump survives, hopefully, either way, is it the end of Zelensky? You mentioned the tragic loss of so many hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians. Ukraine had an impact because of the inflation, grain prices. Ukraine, a breadbasket, one of the breadbaskets of the world. Biden's outgoing administration already was leaking anyway documents against Zelensky in the run-up to Election Day. Is that finished? Is it going to be a negotiated settlement? And will the history books actually show what really happened, or will it be lies like the NATO war in Yugoslavia?
I think what happens in Russia is going to have a lot more to do with how things are settled in Ukraine than what happens in the United States. We have to remember, you go back a few years, there was a peace deal on the table which guaranteed Ukrainian sovereignty. But it was then Boris Johnson and people in the Biden administration who resisted any type of peace deal for their own motivations, which, you know, were an admixture of megalomaniacal impulses and just pure greed that comes from arms deals and this vanity that suggested they were going to capsize the Russian government. All that is set aside now. And what you have is is Ukraine, which is has large destruction. Its agricultural areas have been heavily damaged. Loss of so many young people. There needs to be serious discussions about how do you make Ukraine whole again? Whether the issue is geographical, financial, infrastructure, whatever. And that it's important that those discussions begin. But in a way, the U.S. policy of continuing to feed an escalation there has put the U.S. at a disadvantage to be able to influence the events there. So
It'll influence it by stopping all the money draining away. Well, just, coming to an end here, free speech clearly is going to benefit from a Trump administration, given the censorship industrial complex over the Biden-Harris years. Do you think that's going to be the important legacy of the next term? At least people can talk about things. No one believed the Russiagate stuff. In a sense, it was a vote for Russia, this vote, arguably, because all the lies the press spread, the people didn't seem to care about all of those aspersions and all the lies over years against Trump.
Let's go back to Russiagate, which was a total concoction, conflation, and a narrative that was promoted in the media to try to undermine the Trump presidency from its inception. And of course, it was all a hoax. And yet they sold it. The American people, the media can push this stuff for a while in the States, but after a while, people just get tired of it. And they're tired of it. And they want prosperity here at home. And you can't have war abroad and prosperity at home. The two are at odds. And the United States has just had an election where the American people have spoken loud and clear. Stop the endless wars. Stop the rising budget deficit. Stop the government from spying on us. Take care of things at home. Seal that border and start take care of Americans. This is not that ambitious an undertaking. A lot of it has to do with common sense, which, when you're talking about Washington, it's often in short supply. But we're going to find, I think, with the Trump administration, a renewed effort to focus on things here at home. But to be sure, there are already hawks who are angling to influence State Department policy. And one of the major achievements of a Trump administration would be to cause the State Department to be returned to diplomacy and away from militarism, which they've adopted as an approach towards dealing with other nations.
Well, we look forward to your appointment in a Trump administration, maybe in the State Department, maybe in infrastructure that's so needed. Dennis Kucinich, thank you.
And thank you, and it's good to see you. Thanks.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those surviving the UK-US-EU armed genocide here in this region. We'll be back on Monday again with Elon Musk's Twitter Files co-publisher Matt Taibbi for more analysis on the future of the USA and the world after the historic election win of the 47th US President Donald J. Trump. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.